It's the Green Zone. Once again, I am flying solo. Jamie off this week, takes the bye weeks off, the Riders' bye weeks. From what I have heard, he is enjoying his time off, and I am flying solo. A couple of things that I want to get into today. We had a call from Ken yesterday, and he brought up an interesting point. And after the show yesterday, Scotty, the producer, and I had a quick conversation and thought it would be interesting to sort of calculate where everybody's mind is at this. We're going to try to keep track of the calls and texts that come in once we get going on this. But start thinking about this. What's that next benchmark for the Riders? I mean, let's just say that they have more to prove. And you know what? We're not even halfway through the season yet. Okay? We're close, but we're not quite there. So there's maybe a couple of things you would like to see them achieve before we start, you know, jumping on the Grey Cup bandwagon. And maybe that is a win against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Ken's point, and we'll replay his call from yesterday a little later on the show, was he needs to see this team beat the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. In his mind, not that he is unhappy with a 7-1 start, but in his mind, he's like, I need that. I need to see that. Labor Day Classic, Banjo Bowl, I need to see wins. If I see wins, I'm done. Maybe you're like me, where I'm like, I don't know if the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are the benchmark this year, especially if Zach Kolaris is out for, you know, the rest of the season or a good chunk of it, right? Maybe you're like me and it's the Hamilton Ticats when they return from the bye week on Saturday, August 16th for the afternoon game, which I hope to be in the stands for, which will be a great game. The guaranteed second, well, they're, you know, the firm number two in the CFL right now. So start thinking about that. As always, you can fire us a text at any point here on the Green Zone. The fan line is always open, 877-332-8255. Outside of that, we're talking about the first female umpire in the majors, smelling salts. And I'm going to try to say a tennis player's name. It's a full show. Let's go. All right, off the top of the show, your starting lineup, the big stories of the day, and the Jays, back-to-back wins over the Rockies.
Some teams really pounding that fastball at times.
Now he drives it the other way to right field, and out of here! 3-0 green light for Guerrero, and he punches out his 17th home run of the season. Guerrero now with 59 RBIs as well. And Barger hits the next pitch, deep to right again, and out of here again.
None away, and a big blast in his last at-bat, the two-run homer.
Hit deep, right field, into the night sky, and the upper deck at Coors Field. A towering shot from Varsho.
It travels 467 feet.
To make it 7-2 in the sixth.
The Jays are on fire. Another win last night over the Rockies. They're in Colorado right now as we speak, wrapping up this three-game series, and it is 3-1 in the fourth. I think Gausman is on the mound. They've got someone on. They got a runner on first and a runner on second right now, and like I said, they lead the game. That was the sixth inning from last night. Vladdy getting a dinger, Barger following it up, and then my boy Kirk, he gets walked, so he's on base. And then Varsho, I think he got two last night, I'm pretty certain he got two last night and two complete bombs as well. Vladdy had a good night, three hits, including that home run in the sixth. Toronto has 39 hits right now in the first two games after 25 in the opener. So we'll be keeping track of what they do today because it looks like the bats are going again today. That is one off the club record for a two-game streak, by the way, that 39 hits. The Jays, like I said, are on the field. I'll keep you updated on that as the afternoon progresses. Actually, they just got struck out. So Kevin should be back up here in a minute. And now we'll move over to the CFL. We got week 10 in the CFL just around the corner. I'm thinking the highlight is going to be your Thursday night or tomorrow night, Lions Ticats. So obviously that's in Hamilton. That is a 5:30 start. The Lions will chat with J.C. Abbott from Three Down Nation in about 10 or 15 minutes. He covers the Lions, obviously. Vancouver is coming off the bye week, and they played Hamilton and lost to them in a close one. Actually, I think they were leading pretty much most of that game, and then let their foot off the gas at the end of the fourth quarter and let Hamilton back in it. So they'll be looking for revenge in Hamilton tomorrow night. Montreal versus Edmonton. The interesting note about this one, Cody Fajardo remains the starter in Edmonton, so they're not going to start Trey Ford again. So he's returning. So back-to-back games for the Elks, playing Cody Fajardo's ex-teams, which is kind of interesting. Calgary versus Winnipeg, Vernon Adams Jr. and Zach Kolaris were both full participants, but we still don't know whether or not they'll be taking part. Both of them have been dealing with some injuries. Are we going to avoid a QB, backup QB game? Maybe. And obviously, we have got the Argos and the Red Blacks. Not really sure what to say about that one. Again, I'll mention this again. We're looking for your next benchmark for the Riders. Are you on Ken's side? Do the Blue Bombers need to be beat by the Saskatchewan Rough Riders for you to be putting them into that next sort of bracket of success? Or are you just waiting for the game on the return of the bye week against the Ticats on Saturday, August 16th? By the way, the Labor Day Classic is sold out, so that's good news. We got Daryl Davis in today as well. We'll talk to him about, because I am new here, I'm wondering if that is a quick sellout for the Labor Day Classic. Not positive on that one. All right, now the NFL. We got preseason action. Okay, we got three games tomorrow. Colts, Ravens, Bengals, Eagles, and then Raiders, Seahawks. If you're a big NFL fan, I'm guessing you're watching a bit of preseason action. Three games on Friday, August 8th. Lions, Falcons, Commanders, and the Patriots. It'll be interesting to see the Commanders again this year, because they had some success that no one expected last year. So I'm wondering if they can repeat that. And then the Browns-Panthers, this is an interesting matchup because Shedeur Sanders is starting the first game for the Browns. Now, he's fourth on the depth chart right now, and he's getting a start in the preseason. And the funny thing is, we're sitting here in Saskatchewan, Canada, talking about a fourth string quarterback in the NFL. Why? Well, obviously because of the name, what happened in the draft. But it's intriguing. I used to cheer for the Browns. They were my team. I flipped over to the Bills. Don't need to tell you why. I'm thinking you can probably guess. Might have something to do with a former quarterback who's out with an injury right now. But again, why are we talking about a fourth-string quarterback on the Cleveland Browns right now in the preseason? It'll be interesting to see. If he comes out and he's lights out, does that move him up the depth charts? And we do have some local ball as well. We've got the playoffs kicking off in the WCBL tonight as well.
We're heading into the playoffs. We've been playing really well, and I know the boys are very confident they can get in the victory tonight.
That's the president of the Regina Red Sox, Gary Brotzel. And, of course, we got the East Saskatoon Berries up against Moose Jaw, Medicine Hat up against the Regina Red Sox. In the West, it's Okotoks versus the Brooks, and Sylvan Lake up against Lethbridge. Now, tennis, a lot of people are keeping an eye on a upstart Cinderella Canadian story.
The fairy tale continues. Victoria Ongboko take a bow once again, just 18 years of age, and into the semis here in Montreal.
Ongboko will play after the Jays today, and so she's five wins in to the National Bank Open, and she is taking on the ninth seed. I'm going to avoid saying her name because I probably would butcher it. But anyway, everybody's got eyes on this Canadian 18-year-old, and she is lighting it up. Obviously, we're very excited about the possibility of her making it into the finals. I heard an interview with her, and it's interesting because I think a lot of her success right now is she had absolutely no expectations. She was just going to go, This is it's a tournament. Yeah, I'd like to win, but I don't have any expectations on how I'm going to do. And then she's been lighting it up. So little phenom there, and we'll keep an eye on that game as well. I got to look and find out when that starts because I know it happens after the Jays game, but we'll double check that to see if we're going to get any results before 6 o'clock tonight. I want to say this on the front end of getting into this next. This isn't me trying to get points with the smarter sex listening to the Green Zone. I'll let you decide who that is. But right now, I have a serious question for you. Is it not a bit ridiculous that the major leagues is about to call up the first female umpire this weekend? It's 2025. This is the first time this has ever happened. If you got a thought on that, text or call the Green Zone fan line, 877-332-8255. And I got details on that coming up next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. The Green Zone, Jamie and Locker. Jamie's off this week. I am Locker. I am flying solo. Used to be a big fan of the Black Keys, and then I met him. Sometimes it's not a good idea to meet bands. You're really, specifically bands. I'm sorry to say this. I haven't met too many guys in the sporting world that were like jack wagons. I met quite a few people in another one to avoid. I hate to say this because there's some Saskatchewan roots there, but Gene Simmons from Kiss. I know there's a lot of huge Kiss fans out there, but if you get a chance to meet them, walk away. Or maybe it's just the media. Maybe he was just a jerk to. And I'm not the only one. It wasn't just me that had a bad encounter with old Gene. Anyway, we looked up the time of the tennis match this afternoon.
The fairy tale continues. Victoria Ongboko take a bow once again, just 18 years of age, and into the semis here in Montreal.
There we go. So it is the National Open, and she will be performing. She'll be playing at 4 o'clock on Sportsnet. So if you're paying attention to tennis this afternoon, that's when that matchup is happening. And the majors today announced that the first ever female will be on the bases, umpiring this weekend.
And that one is called by the third base umpire, Jen Powell, a female umpire, umpiring a Major League spring training game. Blummer, this is something that hasn't happened since 2007.
So she was getting her reps in with the spring training, and so she's getting her first regular season game this Saturday. She'll be doing the Marlins Braves series. I guess she'll be on the first one with the umpire of the game, and she's working the game between the Marlins and the Atlanta Braves. She'll be the bases on Saturday, the doubleheader, and then she'll be on the plate on Sunday. So she'll be able to get, I guess, probably the nerves out of the way. And she is from New Jersey. She's got a background in umpiring. I've done a lot of female ball. She is 48 years of age. I saw that today, and I was like, come on. You got to be kidding. Listen, at some point in 2025, I know lots of women that play ball. I know lots of really good women. When I was a kid, we played ball, and there was a pitcher in our hometown, and she used to come in and pitch for it. Not the guys. She would come in, and she threw harder and faster than all the guys, so she was our batting. Like, we trained batting against her, as we had this guy in Golden that was throwing, I don't know. I mean, when you're doing the windmill pitch, I'm thinking 80, 90 would, I think 90 would be ridiculous. It was in the 80s that she was throwing. And we would get her to come out and pitch to us so that we could try to hit somebody that, and she was the best pitcher in the town that I grew up in, which was Creston, just outside of Creston I grew up. Anyway, I was shocked by that. And that's not me trying to get points with the female audience, the Green Zone audience. I was legit shocked by that. By the way, if that gets posted on social media, just stay away from the comment section because it's going to be a nightmare. I don't think I'm wrong. All right, week 10 kicks off tomorrow in Hamilton. The Lions are coming off a bye week and a loss at home to the Ticats. Tomorrow night, they're back in Hamilton for the rematch. The Tabbies have the second-best record in the CFL and have won six in a row. J.C. Abbott, he covers the Lions. He's up next on the Green Zone. That's on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. The Green Zone, Jamie and Locker. It's Locker flying solo. We got J.C. Abbott with us right now. Covers the BC Lions for Three Down Nation. Great follow on Twitter. J.C., I was trying to think of a word that would best describe the BC Lions season so far. I've come up with one. Is frustrating a solid term for this year's season?
I think it's a adequate term to describe what they're going through right now, and one that was kicked around by a couple of people at practice this week. They're so close in so many facets. They've got talent in a lot of areas, but they just can't put it all together, and they haven't been able to find any consistency, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, where, you know, statistically, they've been really strong in some areas and struggled in others. They've had some outstanding games, particularly against Edmonton, and then some real stinkers as well. They're trying to reshuffle some personnel, find spots where guys are slightly more comfortable to solve those issues. But to this point, it has been very frustrating.
They were close in Hamilton. Well, at home to Hamilton, but they kind of let their foot off the gas at the end of the game.
They absolutely were, right? I think if you take the first 57 minutes of that game, I think you can probably say that the Lions deserved to win. But unfortunately, at the end there, they took their foot off the gas and they allowed Hamilton to march the field and score, but not in a quick manner, in a slow, methodical manner. They just couldn't get the stop when they needed to. And you saw essentially their game plan of stop Kenny Lawler backfire because they accomplished that. But Bo Levi Mitchell was undisturbed because they couldn't get any pressure on him because they weren't blitzing. And he was able to dish the ball out to the rest of his receiving corps, and particularly Keandre Smith, who had a tremendous game. And they moved the ball at will to win when the chips were down. So they have to find a way to get more pressure on Bo this week, and they have to find a way to make the stops when it matters and not just allow everything to stay in front of them, because with a quarterback like Bo Levi Mitchell, he's not going to make unforced errors.
So, yeah, my next question was going to be, how do you think they can beat the Hamilton Ticats? Because they're playing them again after a bye week here, this time in Hamilton. So the focus needs to be on Bo. The interesting thing about the schedule for the Lions right now is essentially they've had 3 weeks to focus on one team. Right? Do you think that'll pay off dividends here with the bye week? And was this bye week well timed, in your opinion, for where this team is at and what they need to accomplish for the rest of the season?
I think it was well timed. I think it was much needed to give them some perspective and an opportunity to step back. I think it gives you an advantage when you've got essentially a back-to-back with a bye in between that gives you a lot of time to both assess yourself and assess the opponent. But most importantly, I think they've got a massive advantage because Hamilton on the other side is on a short week. So you've got a team that is extra prepared against the same opponent, extra rested going against a team that has not had very much rest at all and is at the tail end of a very difficult stretch of their schedule. I think if you're a betting man, that puts the advantage on the side of the Lions, even though they weren't able to get it done the last time these two teams played. I think just from a rest perspective and a preparation perspective, they have the upper hand here.
JC covers the BC Lions for Three Down Nation, joining us on the Green Zone. Let's touch a little bit on Nathan Rourke's game, because he's had moments where it was like, okay, everyone expected him to be one of the top players in the CFL this year, got a lot of votes in that regard. And at times he looks like that guy, but then at times he looks a little scattered out there. What do you think about his game right now as somebody that's following the team as closely as you do?
Yeah, I think he is more that player who's at the top of his game. It was, 3 weeks ago that he struggled really against Saskatchewan. I don't have an explanation for that game, to be entirely frank. I don't know that he does either. He was just off. But even, 2 weeks ago against Hamilton, I thought he was very good in that game, very efficient. All those accuracy issues were cleaned up. I think it's just a matter of getting comfortable in Buck Pierce's offense as he gets more accustomed to it, and then making sure that the pieces around him step up, right? I think the Lions don't have as much talent as they did the first time that Nathan Rourke was the starter back in 2022. The receiving core is still good. Keon Hatcher is an incredible player. Justin McKinnis has shown that he can be a difference maker as well, but they're not quite as deep, and the Lions have struggled to keep McKinnis involved the last couple of weeks. Teams have taken him away, so that limits you a considerable degree if you don't have other players step up. I don't necessarily think they have the level of depth that they want Stig at that position to ensure that he always has somebody open and always has a target. That makes it a little bit more difficult on the quarterback, and I think it leads to some more average offensive games, but he elevates that group at the same time and has been able to have success when they find the right schematic match against the defense.
Might make sense that the team is at where it's at just based on the change in leadership, but what's the most significant thing that you've seen from this new leadership in Vancouver, GM Ryan Rigmaiden, head coach Buck Pierce? Is there something you can pinpoint that may be different from past years of you covering this team?
I think what Buck Pierce brings is what people expected him to bring in terms of an offensive philosophy that is a little bit more versatile and challenging for defenses than what Jordan McSimmick had when he was the offensive coordinator here. I think that's been a mission accomplished through the first part of the season. McSimmick was always very rigid. At sometimes that was very successful when they got the right matchups, but he wasn't always able to adapt. I think Pierce has shown a greater variety of looks, has been able to mix things up, and I think you'll see that continue as the season goes along. In terms of the rest of the organizational changes, I mean, it's really TBD. Ryan Rigmaiden has been in the building here for a long time, so their personnel department hasn't dramatically changed in any way, shape, or form. They've found some good players. I think they're lacking in some other areas, but those are also areas they're working to address. And the jury will remain out on Pierce in terms of his ability to truly unite and rally that locker room when the chips are down, right? I think this team has a tremendous amount of respect for him. They know what he accomplished as a player. They know how tough he is. But he's a soft-spoken guy, and that was always the knock on Rick Campbell as well, as when things went off the rails at the end, he wasn't necessarily able to pull that locker room together. We haven't seen Pierce have to do that to the same extent yet, and that will get tested as the season goes along. Is he able to do that role as a head coach and not just be an offensive mind, but actually be a rallier of men? I think he's different in private than he is maybe at the podium for the media, but speaking he's a soft-spoken guy, and you don't often see head coaches with that type of personality.
I've sort of, JC, kept a casual eye on like attendance right across the league, and it's an ongoing conversation about the growth, and there are incremental, changes as far as, you know, attendance goes, you know, depending on the success of a team. Right? You know, Edmonton right now not doing very well, but Vancouver seems to be picking up the slack. I'm interested. Have you seen growth in attendance at the games BC plays for the home games for the Lions this year?
Absolutely. I don't know what the numbers are up by, but I've been very pleased by the numbers. I think the one thing that the Lions have going for them, regardless of what happens on the field, is they've got an engaged owner in Amar Doman, and he's done a fantastic job marketing this team, engaging the fan base. He's willing to put money into it. The attendance has been very strong thus far this season. Can always get better, of course. It's not like they're selling out the joint week in and week out, but certainly from when I first started covering the team and they were in dire straits, it's been a night and day change. And I think that momentum will continue. Even just simple things like the fact that their practice facility is run down. Amar Doman is working on getting them a new practice facility somewhere in the Lower Mainland in the next 2 years. But while that's ongoing, he's injecting money to renovate the current facility, even though the plan is to leave it behind. He's willing to spend that money in the short term, knowing that it will help bring players into the organization and keep them around, that it's one of the big things lacking right now for that team. He's not afraid to spend the cash, and I think that's incredibly heartening when you're a fan of this team and you saw what happened at the later stages of the David Braley era when that investment just wasn't coming.
I did see something on your Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. I can't stop calling it Twitter. I don't even apologize for it. JC, but what exactly was the practice facility like? Because it looked like maybe it wasn't a covered thing, and now it is. Like, what has he done for the team?
Well, it's in the early stages of what they're calling a two-phase renovation right now. The practice facility in Surrey is essentially outdated. It's, I think, over 40 years old. It's incredibly cramped. They don't have enough space or the quality of facilities that you're looking for in a professional sports organization. So what he's done as a short-term fix is they've just finished erecting essentially an outdoor structure outside the building, on the sort of outside platform by the practice field, and they're moving all the gym equipment in there to give them an expanded workout space temporarily while they renovate the interior of the building so they can continue to have regular day-to-day operations. They're not going to be lacking space or lacking the ability to work out, but he's going to expand the locker room and player lounge and update the workout facilities within that building to try and bring them up to the standard of the rest of the league. At the same time, the goal is to leave that building behind in the near future and have another facility either in Surrey or somewhere in the Lower Mainland. So this is just a temporary fix, but it's a badly needed temporary fix, because I think if you poll anyone across the league, the Lions might have the worst facilities overall in terms of their ability to practice. It was certainly a thing that held them back in the CFLPA report card. The team does what they can, but it's just a matter of having an old building that is too small for their purposes and too outdated.
So the practice facility in Surrey, that's outdoors?
No, there's a building and then, of course, the outdoor practice field.
Okay, yeah.
They're attached to each other.
Because in Regina, for the Riders, JC, they practice, obviously, at Mosaic, right? Mm-hmm. And occasionally when they have the smoke situation, which we've had this year, they've had to go indoors to practice. So I'm curious, have you had any? It's not as bad in BC this year, but there's still some forest fires. You haven't had any smoke issues in BC this year, have you?
There have not been smoke issues this year. I know it's been a problem in the past. One thing that has affected the Lions is the field that they have to practice on outside that facility at Tom Biggie Park is a grass field. So obviously there are CFLPA standards for that grass. And when you get into the later stages of the season, what has happened is when it gets rainy out here, as it often does in Vancouver, that field has actually not been up to standard. And they've had to bust the players from the facility 10 minutes up the road to another park in order to practice essentially in a public park, because the turf isn't up to the standard when it gets wet.
Must be fun for the locals, right? Like,
I mean, it's certainly not fun for the players, but yeah, it's a great time for fans to be able to come out and watch and engage with the players. But that is a significant limitation, because if you don't have a practice field that holds up to the rain and you practice in Vancouver, that's going to be a real problem.
I just want to touch on this quickly. JC Doman, the new owner, is he getting credit for the what he's done to grow the game? Like, is that a common thread of conversation in and around Vancouver?
I think it is.
Okay.
Certainly with people who follow the sport and follow the Lions, I don't think you'll find anyone who has got a bad word to say about Amar Doman. I don't know, how much that extends into the general public, but certainly he's acknowledged within the amateur football space and
nice.
And everyone who's engaged with the Lions. It has been a massive investment, and even things like when the SFU football program folded down, he essentially wrote a blank check to try and get that back going. And
oh, wow.
Obviously that was unsuccessful, but that level of engagement, I think, is extended to, any other projects in terms of getting more university football back in this province. It's extended to community football. He's truly shown that he is willing to put his money where his mouth is, and he's got a lot of money to throw around. So it's been a very positive development in that space.
Always enjoy my conversations with you, JC. Thank you for your time today.
It's a pleasure as always.
That is JC Abbott from Three Down Nation. Again, I mentioned it, but a great follow if you're a fan of the BC Lions on Twitter. This day in sports history, up next on the Green Zone, Hammer and Hank is the focus of today's milestone. This is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Hepbridge Farm remembers.
Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
Here comes Bailey. He's got it. Tied a 4, a world record for Donovan Bailey and a gold medal.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
It's better time as me. I'll be back.
This day in sports history on the Green Zone, August 6, 1972. Hank Aaron, Hammer and Hank, breaks a Babe Ruth record.
The hometown hero, Henry Aaron, sets his sights. And there it goes.
Again, 1972, Hank Aaron hits his 666th and 661st home run for the Atlanta Braves, breaking Babe Ruth's MLB record for the most home runs with one team. Interesting little tidbit. Hank Aaron's played for one other team other than the Braves. Who did he play for? I haven't got a prize or anything to give you, so it's just bragging rights, but you can text that in 877-332-8255. Pete Rose was also in that game. He went 0-for-5, which was rare, that game in 1972 on August 6th, where Hank Aaron broke the record. Anyway, if you have the answer for that, baseball fans will know that one. Coming up, our Green Zone NFL preview series continues with a look at the New York Giants. I'm excited about this next chat. It's with Carl Banks, a former NFL. He played for a number of years with the Giants. He now covers the team in New York on radio and Sirius XM. This is 980 CGME and 650 CGME.